First of all, I would like to thanks Peter and also the organizer of the program last week for having me. And it's a pleasure to visit here. And thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to giving a seminar here. So today I'm going to talk about gauge theories in three dimensions, with the n equal to 4 supersymmetry or 8 supercharges, and mirror symmetry, and some exact quantity, which you can use to study the vacuum moduli spaces of these theories, known as Hilbert series. I will give a detail about all of these words. Okay, so this talk is based on a series of works with various collaborators. So Stefano Cremonesi and Amichai Hanani at Imperial College, and Alberto Zaffaroni in Milano, also with Anjade in Texas and Peter Korotiev, and based on older work also, as you see here. So, okay, let me first start why gauge theory in three dimensions with n equal to 4 supersymmetries are interesting. So first of all, there are two, the vacuum moduli space of these theory. Each of these theory contain two main branches you can talk about. First of all, it's a Higgs branch. It's like a face of the theory, basically. So basically, this is parameterized by the vacuum expectation values of the scalar components of the hypermultiplet of the theory. And this is known as Higgs branch. So these are matter field. And this is known to be classically exact. For example, if you write down a metric on a moduli space, you will see that there is no room for quantum correction. On the other hand, there is another branch known as Coulomb branch, which is parameterized by vacuum expectation values of a scalar components in the vector multiplets. And this branch of the moduli space receives quantum corrections. Both are hyperkähler spaces. And for each 3D n equal to 4 gauge theory, there is an R symmetry of SO4, which is SU2 that rotate the hypermultiplet and the vector multiplet. So basically, one can see that the gauge coupling behave like a background field inside the Coulomb branch, and is rotated by this symmetry. So it can only give a correction to the Coulomb branch, and this is how you see the one loop correction to the metric that people did back in the 90s. And let me emphasize again that both of these are hyperkähler spaces. And so in this talk, I would start first of all from the Higgs branch and then proceed to Coulomb branch. Now, since Coulomb branch receive a lot of quantum correction, so what one could ask, what is the suitable quantum description for the Coulomb branch? And it turned out that this involves a monopole operator. This is known in supersymmetric gauge theory. This is known from by Kapustin from 2002. So this is some feature of these class of theories. And in three dimensions, there is also a symmetry known as mirror symmetry that exchanges the Higgs branch of one theory with the quantum Coulomb branch of another theory. So if you have theory A and theory B, Higgs of A become Coulomb of B, and vice versa. So if there are mirror pair. And as a working assumption, this is very useful for study moduli spaces of various theories. Sometimes in theory, if one of the theory doesn't have a known Lagrangian description, you can use the mirror theory to study the branch of the other one, which has no known Lagrangian. For example, 3D Galois type theories, which I will explain to you later, sometimes these theory doesn't admit the known Lagrangian description. You can use mirror to study Higgs branch of this guy. I'll go into detail soon. Okay, so this is features of 3D n equal to 4 gauge theories that I would like to focus on today. Any questions so far? Okay. So let me give you an overview of my talk. This is not in order, but I will try to cover all of these topics. So first of all, I will talk about the Higgs branch of 3D n equal to 4 gauge theories. One might ask, this is a classical exact quantity. What is interesting about it? Even if classical exact, you compute it from the classical vacuum equation, there are some interesting feature. Because the space is hyper-Kähler spaces, have a very interesting certain geometrical properties, which I will present. And there will be a connection to also instanton moduli space and Nekrasov partition function, which I will present soon, okay? And after I explain Higgs branch, I will move on to the Coulomb branch and its quantum correction. So I will tell you how quantum correction arises, how we deal with the quantum description of this space, okay? And I will present you an exact quantity which you can use to study both Higgs branch and Coulomb branch, known as Hilbert series. In terms of physics, this has a interpretation as a generating function of gauge invariant quantity on the moduli space. I will focus only on moduli space here. Of course, there are more protected operator than operators on the moduli space, but today I will focus on just gauge invariant quantities on the moduli space, okay? Right, and I will move on to a class of theory known as a three-dimensional Sicilian theory. I will tell you the origin of this name. Basically, this is a theory of class S, or 4D Giotto's theory, compactified on a circle. I will talk about the mirror of this theory under the mirror symmetry and the constructions. And I will talk about the Coulomb branch of these mirror theories. And finally, as an application, this is an important application from my point of view, is the connections of the both Coulomb and Higgs branch through the moduli spaces of instanton. Since today I will talk about a new way of computing certain exact quantity, we get a new technology for computing instanton partition functions. And it's turned out to be 5D, this Hilbert series turned out to be five-dimensional instanton partition function for K instanton in a group G on a flat space. And it will tell you for any exceptional prescription to compute this quantity for any simple group G, including exceptional and non-simply less group for any instanton number G. Here. So, yes. So this is the overview of the talk. So let me first start from part one, Higgs branch. So, right. A way to realize the Higgs branch of a 3D n equal to 4 gauge theory is to translate theory into 4 supercharged language. So 3D n equal to 2 language. So, once you write that down, you will see that the vacuum equation consists of F term and D term. And these give rise to the moment map equations of the hyperkähler quotient. Okay? And a suitable description of this is the term of gauge invariant quantities, subject from the constraint from the F term relations. Okay? I will explain this in detail soon. And on this branch, a Hilbert series is a generating function that count gauge invariant operator with respect to U1 global symmetry, which is a generator of SU2H, and with respect to the flavor symmetry present in the theory. I will give you an example soon. So let's move to one very simple example, whose Higgs branch have a very interesting geometrical property and linked to some interesting quantity. So let's start with U1 gauge theory with n flavor. I will use this notation to denote quiver of the theory. When you see a circular node, this means gauge symmetry, and this is the flavor symmetry, and this line denotes the bifundamental hypermultiplet, okay, in the theory. As I said, I will translate into 3D n equal to 2 notation, so the quiver become like this. In this case, a hypermultiplet translate into two chiral multiplet transform in opposite charge, carry opposite charges. And since the U1 also have a scalar component in the vector multiplet, I would denote this by phi. script file. Okay, so this is how to translate the 4D 3D n equal to 4 to 3D n equal to 2. And there is a superpotential in the cubic term. I will not turn on any mass term for now, okay, for simplicity. So this is the superpotential one could write down. And it's a cubic term because of n equal to 4 supersymmetry we have, all right? Okay, and we want to focus on the Higgs branch. So basically, this guy was frozen. So the only relevant F term for us is the derivative of this guy with respect to this phi. And you get this thing, z equal to 0. So contraction of the QQ tilde. So, okay. So you can see that because of this, and this branch is parametrized by the gauge invariant quantity subject to this relation. So a very easy analysis reveals that the gauge invariant quantities you could write down is just a bilinear in this. So it's just QI, Q tilde. This carry charge plus 1 and minus 1. So you put them together, it's neutral under this U1. And this is the meson, right? And it's subject to the relation that M trace M or MII equal to 0. It just follows from this relation. So first of all, you see that this matrix, an N by N matrix here, subject to the traceless relation. So in fact, this quantity transform in the adjoint representation, which I denote by the highest weight, of SUN, and not just UN, okay? Right. So now, an interesting thing is, if you study this further at higher order in M, you will see certain structure. For example, thanks to the F term, you will see that the square of this matrix is 0. So this is a Newportant matrix, basically. So M is Newportant because if you multiply these two matrices, you will see this contraction and it's 0 due to this F term. And also, you will see also certain structure of certain contraction by epsilon equal to 0. So this gives rise to certain properties of this moduli space. Namely, this is a Newportant cone, basically. So the Higgs branch, if I summarize, is the N by N matrix subject to the tracelessness square equal to 0, and there are certain relations that it needs to be subject to, which all follow from the F term, basically. And basically, this space, first of all, we know this is a Higgs branch of U1 gauge theory with N flavors. And also, we know that this is actually the ADHM construction of one SUN instanton on C2 with the translational part of the instanton quotiented out. So basically, we call this the reduced moduli space of one SUN instanton on C2. And this is the minimal mean is square to 0, Newportant cone of SUN. So even this simplest theory has certain interesting geometrical property of the Higgs branch. And in fact, it's even more interesting to study the chiral ring of this theory on the Higgs branch. Basically, you look at all gauge invariant quantity that come with this thing. So you know that since you can construct just everything just from bilinear, so any gauge invariant is a product of matrices M, basically. And this matrix M carry charge 2 under the generator of the SU2H. It's carry charge 2 because it's bilinear. It's Q tilde Q, basically. So an operator with charge, I should say 2p here instead of p. Charge 2p transform in the symmetric power to the p of the adjoint representation because you just have to multiply these m together, right? P times in certain ways. So this is in a symmetric to the p of the adjoint representation. Okay, right. However, this is just a multiplication of m p times, but we haven't taken into account of these relations. So the minimal nilpotency and all of these relations, well, basically this guy is not an irreducible representation. This is a reducible, so you can decompose this guy, which contain this guy plus other stuff. And one can show that these relation, in particular this new potency, kill all of this guy. So basically, what you are left is this guy. So basically, the gauge invariant that carries charge 2p transform in this representation of SUN, okay? So one can construct a generating function using just simply character of this representation, of this irreducible representation, grading with the U1 global symmetry 2p here. So basically let T keep track of this U1 global charge. So T to the 2p means we're interested in the operator that carries charge 2p, and this is how it transforms under SUN representation. And we just sum from p equal to 0 to infinity. This is generating function that I mentioned before, and this is known as Hilbert series. So first of all, it's count gauge invariant object on a moduli space, and it's written in terms of character of a representation this way. Okay, so this is the Hilbert series of a Higgs branch of U1 gauge theory with n flavor. Yep. Ah, this is the Higgs branch, not the Coulomb branch yet. You can view that from the Coulomb branch, which I will go over that very soon. You will see also that in some special case, you can realize this from also what you said, but from different theory. Yeah. So, for example, if you take n equal to 2, you want with 2 flavor, this moduli space can be realized from both Higgs branch and Coulomb branch. It's self-mirror, basically. I will tell you about that very soon. Thank you. So, yes, so from now on, I just look at the F term subject, the gauge invariant subject to the F term relation. So basically, just F term quotient by D term. It's classical Higgs branch, basically, right? Good. So basically, right, this is the okay, so you could ask the same thing that for one instanton for any simple group G. So basically, I just look at this quiver. So U1, UN, this you have seen. You can also look at O1, USPN, and USP2N, I'm sorry. This one is O2N, SON. Okay, so these are gauge theory. We describe the reduced part of the G is a gauge group here, instanton on C2, and has a very uniform structure. You could do that. Once you compute this, you will see that this formula actually goes through for at least classical group that I described here. So these are G that I'm talking about. Okay? You get a very uniform formula, namely the operator that carries charge 2p transform in the p times the highest weight of the adjoint representation, and these are irreducible representation of the group G. So this carry through for all G, basically. And you can also use the argument presented here, which is also go through for exceptional group to establish this relation. So okay, we count operator, and so what? What is useful about this thing? That's right. You can talk in this in 4D n equal to 2 also. The Higgs branch is still the same. Right. You're right. So this you can also say, okay, instanton moduli space. From the point of view of instanton moduli space, you can use this construction as in, say, DP brain with DP plus 4 system. And this gauge theory arises from this world volume from here. This basically n of them with plus perhaps orientative fold. And this p can be anything from 2 to 6, basically. So it doesn't matter which dimension of gauge theory in Higgs branches. It, what I describe here is the same. But I just focus on three dimension for today. Okay, now this relation has a connection to what's known as Nikrasov partition function, basically. So by counting gauge invariant on the Higgs branch, if you make certain change of variable as follows, like t equal to e to the half beta epsilon 1 plus epsilon 2 with the x, well, x, I'm talking about reduced instanton for now. So if I want to get the full moduli space, I just have to insert the translation factor, which is C2, the mode that instanton move on C2 here, times this piece. And let me take x to be this quantity, and take this y to be this quantity, and you take beta goes to 0. What you obtain is this function. This is a four-dimensional Nikrasov partition function restricted to the one instanton sector. So what I presented here is that I give an interpretation of a five-dimensional Nikrasov partition function as a counting function of the operator on the Higgs branch of the ADHM construction, basically. And if there are no ADHM construction, you can take this as a counting certain operator. For example, one E6 instanton, this is on, still on the Higgs branch of the Minahan-Nemenchesky theory. And this also reduced in the same way. And this is the general formula for Nikrasov partition function for one instanton for any group. You can see that it depends only on the root structure of the algebra. Okay, so this is one application that you get from studying Higgs branch of three-dimensional gauge theory. Okay, so any questions so far? Okay, if there is no, I will move on to part two, the Coulomb branch. This is very different in nature, actually, the way I will present it. So let me first start from the Coulomb branch of a three-dimensional n equal to 4 gauge theory. So first of all, a vector multiplet contains a gauge field and three real scalar. This is in the triplet of the SU2V I mentioned on the first slide. Mm-hmm. And only in the adjoint representation of the gauge symmetry G. And you can combine this into three real scalar into a real scalar, which I will call sigma, and a complex scalar, phi. Okay? And so basically, I group them into n equal to 2 vector multiplet. And basically, if you give a generic vacuum expectation values to the sigma, where j equal to 1 rank of g, breaks the gauge group g to u1 to the rank. Right? This is why it's called Coulomb branch, because of this u1 interaction. And for each u1 factor, the a mu can be dualized to a periodic scalar, which I denote by small a. Okay. And so since this is a periodic scalar, you could form this into a chiral field by taking the exponentiation of this I times this A for each J and pack with this sigma J, with this effective gauge coupling, which depend on this sigma. So this is the chiral field you can make out of this. The thing is, in order to compute this G effective, the exact form at any coupling is not necessarily known. It can be computed sometimes at a weak coupling. So, right, so this is the chiral field that can be formed from these guys. Now, there is a proposal, this is dated back from 2002, that a suitable description of the Coulomb branch is to replace this chiral field by monopole operators, which I will denote by xj. And so you should think about this monopole operator as a disorder operator that insert at a point in space-time. And so monopole operator for gauge group G is specified by the magnetic fluxes. M1, I would denote by a tuple, a vector, okay? M1 to MR rank of G at the insertion point. And this insertion, since monopole in three dimension is also a point-like object, I could treat it as a local operator. So this magnetic flux M in the U1 to the rank of G, labeled by the weight of the dual group, Goddard Nutz Olive dual group G check, modulo by the Y transformation of this G check. So this guy basically live in the, you call it co-weight lattice, and modulo by the Y group, basically. So this is how you label the monopole flux. And if you turn on monopole flux M, this break G to the residual gauge symmetry. And this is what Soha would address earlier, I guess. So for example, if you take G to be U2, this is tuple of length 2, M1 and M2. Up to a wire transformation, you can order this guy. Let's just take M1 greater than or equal to M2 in this case. And basically, if M1 equal to M2, the residual gauge symmetry is U2. It doesn't break this U2. But if M1 not equal to M2, this breaks U2 to U1 square. So this pattern of flux determine what is the residual symmetry you have at the insertion point, okay? Right, and if the group is larger, you just determine how many repetition of the M's are there, and it will tell you this residual gauge symmetry HM. Okay, so there is monopole operator. You determine the residual gauge symmetry by the flux. And the quantum description is that you can dress this monopole operator by all products of phi that are invariant under the action of HM. So basically, you have this phi, it's a complex scalar. You can dress the monopole operator with this phi. And when I mean possible product, you just dress it with the Casimir of this guy, Casimir in this group, HM. Okay, and this is a quantum description of the chiral ring on the Coulomb branch of the theory. So, right. So this is the one way to realize a description of the Coulomb branch of the theory. And in three dimension, you also have a topological symmetry. So a monopole operator may carry charge under a topological symmetry, which is basically the center of the gauge group G. So if you take G equal to unitary group UNC, there is a topological U1J symmetry, which is associated with the current J equal to star F, and this associated to the U1 factor inside this UN. And the monopole operator with flux M carries this charge under this U1J symmetry, okay? And if you, in the theory, a topological symmetry or a collection of them, if you have many gauge groups, can enhance to a larger non-abelian symmetry. There are many non-trivial examples in several papers here, okay? So let me present one of them to clarify what I'm talking about. But before that, let me talk about how you construct generating function of these a chiral operator on the Coulomb branch. So as I said, operator on the Coulomb branch is the monopole operators dressed with powers of scalars in the residual gauge group HM before, okay? So you can count this operator with respect to the U1 global symmetry, which is the generator of this SU2V, which is basically the vector component of the SO4R symmetry, and with respect to the U1J charges. So you can construct a generating function like that. So this T keep track of this dimension of the operator. The Z of this monopole operator the Z keep track of the topological charges, and this P of G basically tells you the powers of this scalar that you have to address into the monopole operator. This formula will be very explicit soon, but let me present the general expression. Okay, and the sum over the fluxes of the monopole operator in the dual lattice modulo by the Weyl group. So T keep track of U1 global symmetry, which is the generator of the SU2V. The Z keep track of collection of the U1J, and this is the degree of the Casimir in HM. And this is the dimension of the monopole operator. So basically, this will work for any group which have Lagrangian description. So basically, the contribution comes from hypers, the weights of the hypers, and the root of the gauge group, basically. I will show you an explicit expression now. So let's take an example of this. It's pretty classic, actually. It's affine D4 quiver, that's what we call it. Basically, this is the Dynkin diagram of an extended SO8 algebra, if you like. Okay, so what you have five node, four of them have the mark 1, 1, 1, 1, and 2. You interpret this as U1, 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 U2. Okay, so this is the quiver that I'm going to start with. All right. Now, because of this quiver, there is an overall U1 that decouples, which you can remove it from any node, basically. For symmetry reason, I will remove from here. This is the overall U1, which no matter was charged under, basically, because all of them are gauge group. All right. So basically, the process I described before was the following thing. So let's look at the monopole that come in this theory. So there are, for each gauge group, you insert some flux. For U1, you insert flux called U1, U2, small U2, U3, and U4. These are fluxes associated with the monopoles in each of these U1, okay? I label it by here. And for U2, since you have rank 2, there is two of them, and one, and then two, follow from the previous slide. It's clear at this stage? This is monopole fluxes. Good. Now, so there are, this is the formula for the dimension of the monopole operator coming from this guy. So the contribution comes from the hypers in the theory minus the vector contribution from the vector multiplet. So let me show you. This piece coming from this hypermultiplet. So you can see that there are hypermultiplet linked between U1, U2, U1, U2 here, right? Four of them. This is the contribution here. All right? And for vector, there's coming from this guy. This is the root acting on this N1, N2. So this is the dimension of the monopole operator, delta, I presented in the previous slide. Everything okay for this part? Now, since each of the gauge groups are unitary, is unitary. So each of them carry U1 topological charge, right? So I keep track of this guy here. So the topological charge for this guy is Z1, U1, Z2, U2, C3, U3, C4, U4, and this is C0, N1 plus N2. This is the topological charge coming from each node, U1 for each. This is global symmetry, basically, right? And this is the Casimir. So the P correspond to U2 node, and P correspond to U1 node. So for U1, it cannot be broken further by the flux. So this is the Casimir under the U1. Basically counting Casimir that come under the U1. And for the U2, if N1 equal to N2, it preserves this U2, so you count the Casimir inside this U2. And if N1 not equal to N2, this U2 is broken to U1 square, so this count the Casimir inside the U1 square. You stick it in here. Now, there is some blue pieces that I haven't explained. So this blue piece is coming from that you have an overall U1, which no matter will charge under, okay? So you have to decouple this guy out. So you can do this by multiply the inverse of the U1 inside this U2 and fix the flux of N2, the lowest flux to be zero. This is how you fix the gauge symmetry.
But it doesn't matter which U1.
It doesn't matter. You can fix it in either node, but for symmetry reason, I choose to do it in the, from the middle node. If you want, you can set U4 to zero, for example. This is also give the same answer. Okay? Right. So this is the formula. And you sum over all fluxes. It's n with respect to this order of a Weyl group and this the monopole fluxes inside the U1 from minus infinity to infinity. What do you get here? Okay. There is an overall U1. It gives rise to a certain shift symmetry. And basically, you can this give rise to the relation that C naught square, C1, C2, C3, C4 being 1.
Because otherwise, if you said U4 equals 0, you would never have any
fugacity at all. Yes, that's fine. Because there are 5 fugacities here, right? But you need only 4 of them. Because in this language, there's the... Oh, wow. That's a long jump.
So your definition of the partition function is that thing modulo relation.
That's right. Let me show you this thing.
Okay.
Yes. If you fix... From U2, you have this relation to respect the shift symmetry of the, yeah. So after all, you will have 4, not 5, okay? So you can feel free to do it at any node. This is just for symmetrical reason, basically. It's respect the symmetry that you have in the quiver. And basically, once you do this thing, if you expand this guy, this formula in a power series in T, you have a very simple relation, simple formula. This is basically the sum of this mess. It's just there. So basically, you have t to the 2p, sum over p times the adjoint representation of SO8. And this is it. So what does it tell you? This is basically the formula that I wrote down earlier for group G, right? So first of all, the 4U1 symmetry, 4U1 topological symmetries enhanced to SO8, as you can see from this. Okay, and this is the Hilbert series for one reduced one SO8 instanton moduli space on C2. Which, okay, agree with the mirror symmetry. This is actually predicted by Interrelegator and Seiberg, that if you take an affine D4 quiver, the Coulomb branch of this guy should give rise to SO8 instanton on flat space. And indeed, this can be shown using this computation. Right, so this agrees with the prediction of the mirror symmetry. Okay, so any questions so far regarding this computation?
Some assumption involved that in a given monopole sector, there's no relations in the power ring that you're building there. I mean, you're taking products of all the Casimirs.
Right.
Monopole.
That's right.
But the power ring relations exist in general in the world. So.
Well, this is big. Well,
so
okay.
Sure that there's nothing that you're not overcounting when you just take all the gauge invariant things that you can write.
No, because the Casimir were, okay, so you there, okay, for the Casimir part, you agree that there is no...
I don't know where there should be relations. I'm asking if there's an assumption about, or if there's a theorem that says that there's no relation.
So the assumption was per lattice, there is one monopole operator. This is one assumption, okay?
But once I'm in that monopole sector, and then I'm building all of the operators of the form, mm-hmm.
Well, for example, that we could test in many quivers, we don't see any.
Okay, but a priori, it's an assumption.
I think, yes, it's built in this description that I described to you. You're right, yes. That the...
Simple example, you have U1 with two flavors.
Yes.
The one of the two flavors is a ring relation.
That's true, but it's only a pair. So okay, that was the Coulomb branch of U1 with n flavor. I could do that example also. The construction doesn't. The dressing was still as I described. So basically, coming from the x dressed with the phi, the power of phi, those have no relation. But when you compute all of those things, there are relation of the dressed operator. Right. For example. Sorry?
No, I had a different question.
No, this is a different question, actually. Of course. Look. This guy, the Hilbert series of this guy, the Hilbert series of this guy were constructed as I described before. He asked whether there is relation between these Casimirs. Yes. There are, of course, relation in this thing. After you dress all the operator, the dress operator can have the ring, chiral ring relation. That's why it's chiral ring, right? Yeah. So this is the it's also built in here, that relation, but this is different from what he asked. Well, I don't know whether it can be covered for all cases. Shlomo and Brian Villette has a certain proposal that this thing can be recovered from perhaps index of S2 times S1. Coulomb branch index. You can have a look at the paper called Down the Rabbit Hole. I don't know. That is 3D. That is 3D, not 4D. I have a look at the paper. There are some formula that look a bit like this. With this, that formula look similar to this guy. I don't know. I'm not the author of those work. You can check that. But this is what we claim. Well. In example, you can say that, well, they give one example there, which is U1 with two flavors.
Only a special case, yeah.
Only when you have genus zero.
When there are no loops in the quiver. Otherwise, the whole other would index. And so it's extra
operators. I will cover this later in the talk. Okay? Well, you don't need an index, you just need a Coulomb branch description. This is much simpler. Here, I just dress monopole operator by the product of the Casimir, right? And that's the... I will present you the case where this no Lagrangian, even on this side.
Yeah, but when you're talking about symmetries, you can start comparing the,
Yeah.
That is not in the UE,
correct? Let me present you those examples and see if you have a further question. Right? Up to that. Well, okay. And F equal to NC. Oh, okay. So you. Okay. So, okay. This formula have. Okay. So you can say that this formula will have some divergence when this delta hits zero or negative values. It can happen. But I will tell you one way to bypass this problem. This is probably part of the thing that you suggested. When the flavor fall below the 2 times the color, right? The dimension of the monopole operator can hit 0. Mm-hmm. Yes, and then I admit to you that, yes, that this formula have some divergence because the way you sum over the lattice, and this being 0, you grade this respect to the t, so it leads to divergence. I will talk about this later in in the talk.
It was something about from hyperfield geometry is implicit here somehow. So you get starting the Coulomb branch
right
in the UV already filler.
Right.
And then you take a higher limit. I mean the manifold seems to be changing value because I thought like from up now.
Yes, you can argue, yes, that's for example.
You do that just for n equals 4 discontinuous or also for n
equals 2? N equal to 4 only in 3D. N equal to 2 would be much more complicated because the dressed will not come from the product of Casimir. It will be more complicated. You have chiral ring which can transform in any representation of the gauge group G. And on top of that, you could have the relation between these fields. All right, so this is basically follow from this description that I described to you. And of course, this is not just the classical Coulomb branch, this is a quantum description of the Coulomb branch. So it's not just collection of R3 times S1, right? As you can see, yeah. You see the enhancement of SO8 and so on. Okay. This is correct that this have Lagrangian description. I will go further in the talk that how to deal with the harder cases later. So before going to more complicated example, let me also tell you that this Hilbert series also have a certain interesting property, namely gluing. So basically, for example, if you look at this quiver, you could glue the 2, 2, 2, 2 together to form this quiver. And each of these guy come from 1, 2. This is U1 with 2 flavor. How do you realize this from this building block? So basically, what you could do is to proceed as before. However, there is a crucial point that for each building block here, you can compute the Hilbert series as before, but then you turn on background fluxes. So basically, you view flavor symmetry here as carry certain monopole flux, but it's background charge. So we denote this by NF. So you can put this as a function of the dimension of the monopole operator here, and then you sum as before. So this Hilbert series for each basic building block will also depend on this guy. And now what you could do is you just multiply all the basic building block together and gauge the common U2 global symmetry. And then you get this quiver, okay? This is the gluing factor if you want. This gluing factor coming from monopole operator contribution from this U2 and this Casimir of this U2 in this example. So it makes things very simple because for each basic building block, you can write a closed form. This is the closed form of the 1, 2. And if you want to see C2 mod Z2 Hilbert series, which is the Coulomb branch of this U1 with 2 flavor, you just need to set this n to 0. Then you get this. Okay? The Hilbert series, Coulomb branch Hilbert series of U1 with 2 flavor. So this guy, this is with background flux turn on. So, okay, now you glue 4 pieces of this 1, 2 together, like this, and mod out by the overall U1, so you recover the previous formula that I wrote down. Okay, so this is how to obtain it from using building block. This is one simple example. This technology will apply to an infinite class of theory, basically.
Would it apply also the theory for the S3 times 1 that does not reduce to the Hilbert series?
This is on the Coulomb branch side. What is they mentioned? Oh, the Higgs branch, yes. Ah, okay, very good. So you asking when the Higgs branch Hilbert series doesn't match with the Hall Littlewood? Yeah, okay. This is where you have certain loop in the quiver. Right. For example, you can take the simplest one is this.
Instead of the index of the 14 theories.
He
yeah, I'm just asking conceptually.
The fermion will count it differently.
Yeah, this, but then I'm asking the concept of function. Whether in cases that we don't know how to reproduce these results from a partition function.
Uh-huh.
In those cases, these results are incorrect.
Well, it's not incorrect. We study very different thing. I count gauge invariant, right? Subject to the F term and D term relation. And that's it. I mean, so basically chiral operator with subject to F term and D term is a very honest computation.
So why don't you compare the index?
In the case that you can compare is match.
I think you're confusing. The paper you're referring to the rapid of the block is three partition functions, nothing to do with indices. Okay?
S2 times S1.
S2 times S1, exactly. So
right.
When you compare these with S2 times S1 calculations.
In some cases, yes, they provide this example in the paper of TSU2.
It's about S3 partition functions. I don't understand.
Okay, we can talk about that later. Let me not make any claim to that, okay? So, but what I computed here, I mean, you see one example here that is SO8. This is an honest computation we did. If you want to link to the index, we can also discuss there. I can point it out where we should compare, or this potential place where we should compare. Okay. So, but this is.
One would expect generally that any counting problem is protected can be presented as a path integral.
You can interpret it like that, and we count only the object on the moduli space.
No, but it is presented as a path integral.
This we I don't know. Okay. Thank you. So, right. Uh-huh. There is a lot of jump here. Okay, good. So, right. So, I presented you a gluing technique for the how to do this. And this is not just technique that apply for this example. It's apply for a large class of example. So, in the next part of my talk, I would like to... Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. I would like to present a class of theory called 3D Sicilian theory and beyond. So this is the name, where the name come from. This is a flag of Sicily. And so basically this is the basic building block basically of this guy. You can build the other guy by gluing this guy together. Right. So, okay. Right, so 3D Sicilian theories, these are 3D gauge theory that obtained from 6D 2,0 compact defined on S1 times Riemann surfaces with punctures. And most of these theory do not have known Lagrangian description. Well, some do, and many do not. Right, and for each puncture, you talk about partition, basically. Each puncture is accompanied by partition. This is for type AN theory, AN minus one theory. This is a partition of N. And the partition corresponds to the embedding of the SU2 algebra into SUN, such that the n-dimensional representation is decomposed into dimension of E-reps of SU2. You can also do for DN, and even for exceptional group, you can also realize this by taking the fundamental representation of E6 and decompose it like this. This is probably will not be covered here. What is special about DN is that if you have this dimension, 2N dimensional representation, this is a real representation. When you decompose into E-reps of SU2, you know that when it's even dimensional, this is pseudo-real. So there's some certain restriction that the even row k can appear even times, and this is coming the name under the D partition of SO2N. So this is one way to realize this puncture. And you can also introduce twists upon the compactification to get the B and C partition. And for each puncture that you see, there is an associated global symmetry as coming from the data of the puncture itself. So for this is the global symmetry for each cases, right? And if you have a Riemann surface with a collection of punctures, the global symmetry for each puncture, there's a collection of them, and they can enhance to a even a bigger one, right? Okay, may enhance to a larger group, right? Okay, so right now, if you take a theory on a Riemann surface with n punctures, you can ask what is the, you compactify it to three dimension. So this is now three-dimensional theory, right? That's coming from 4D Riemann surface on puncture, reduced on S1. What is the mirror of this? This is known and presented by this gentleman, Benini, Tachikawa, and Shea back in 2010, that it looked like a star shape. A star shape quiver is the mirror theory of this guy. So if you have each puncture, you have each leg of the star, okay? And you glue via the common symmetry, G modded out by the center of G. Okay, this is the mirror theory. And for if you have a higher genus G, the mirror will just have more G adjoint field on the central node. Okay, and basically, this will give you a description of the mirror of this guy. Now, I haven't tells you what this basic building block that you glue together, but you see some kind of gluing via the common symmetry at the central node. So that's why the gluing technique I presented earlier can be useful. Now, about the basic building block here, this is due to Gaiotto and Witten in 2008. So for each partition row, it's associated with each leg T row of G. So the way to realize T rho of G is to realize it as a boundary theory of 4D n equal to 4 super Young Mills on half space, whose half BPS boundary condition specified by the embedding of SU2 inside this Lie algebra of the GNO dual group, G check. Okay, and rho can be classified by the Newportian orbit. So let me give you an example. For a classical group G, T rho of G is a quiver theory. For exceptional group, this is not known. Okay. So for rho being this guy and take G to be SUN, this is the quiver. Okay. So it's a start with the global symmetry UN. Flavor symmetry UN, and you connect it with U1, U2, UN1, UN2, up to UND, and subject to this guy. And this row is non-decreasing. This also have a brain construction based on Hanani Witten. So this is, you can construct it using D3, NS5, and D5 in this picture. And row has an interpretation of the set of linking number of each NS5. Okay. Right. And for SO2, SON, and USPN, what you could do is you can put oriented for three plane on here and realize the gauge theory. And so for G equal to SO5, for example, the GNO dual is B2, this is C2. Okay, so this is USP4. And so rho is a partition of 4, not 5 here. Okay, it's a belong to the dual group. And this is the quiver. Corresponds to those, okay? And for some certain special case, the Higgs and Coulomb branch have certain interesting property. I guess I don't have much time to talk about this. So let me skip this. Okay, so let me talk about these guys. So you know that, fine. I told you the basic building block for G being classical, you can glue this thing together using the gluing technique I described before. And you can compute the Coulomb branch Hilbert series using the monopole formula, which is the formula that have T to delta inside. That can be done for quiver theory. However, there are two problems here. So one problem is for G being exceptional group, the Lagrangian description is not available for each leg. So they can be problematic. No starting point for the monopole formula because you don't have a weak coupling description where you start off. Now, there is a second one which is more conceptual, is that if you look at this theory, for example, this is the simplest theory of SO5, you can imagine. The monopole formula blows up at infinity to infinity because the monopole operator delta vanishes when the flux is non-zero. So you sum over them and you get infinity. This is come with the name, actually. This class of theory is known as bad theory. This is due to Gyota-Witten back in 2008. So namely, the SO4 UVR symmetry is not a subgroup of the R symmetry in the superconformal field theory in the infrared. And for these T rho of G theory, badness occur when you have, when the quiver contains this gauge group with low rank of the flavor symmetry. So for example, in this case, USP2, right? You can take NC equal to 1, and you can see that this has two flavor, 4 half hypers, so two flavors, and this fall below this bound. So basically, this gives rise to the badness of this type of quiver, and the monopole formula blows up. But this is not the end of the story, that you cannot compute this guy. You can also, there is another way to realize for these class of theory, T rho of G, there is another way to compute the partition compute the Coulomb branch index. Now I say index. Coulomb branch Hilbert series of this guy. Many words now. Okay, of this guy. And this is called the Hall-Littlewood formula for the Coulomb branch of T rho of G. This formula doesn't care about what monopoles you have in the theory. It depends only the rho, only on the rho of the partition and the G. So this is how it looks like. So basically, these are the notation that I just want to present you. So this depends on how the root of the group G acted on the background monopole flux. This is not a monopole associated with each group. It just depends on the flavor symmetry you have, okay, in the theory, which is G dual basically. And this depends on the rank of G, and there are two factors, this K and this psi. This psi is known as the Hall-Littlewood polynomial. You can evaluate this for any group G, including exceptional group. This K is the same as the K that appear in the four-dimension Hall-Littlewood index. This coming from embedding of this SU2 inside the group G, basically. And this is the flavor symmetry. Note that this formula also works for exceptional group G, because it doesn't depend on how you realize whether you have Lagrangian description or not. Basically, it just depends on you have group G, say take E6, and you embed SU2 group inside that, and you compute the commutant. And this gives rise to this flavor symmetry. So this will bypass the problem of badness earlier, and this can be also generalized to exceptional group mention. So this is a general formula that if you glue all of these things together, this is the general formula that you need to sum. So each part of this is the each leg contribution of each leg, and you glue via the common symmetry. And this is the gluing factor that I mentioned before, okay? Since I'm running out of time, I won't explain much of the details here, but what I would like to mention is that for G equal to zero, you compute Coulomb branch of this guy, which is Coulomb branch of the mirror. And it agrees with the Higgs branch of the theory. This is Higgs branch of 3D n equal to 4 theory, but it's turned out to be also equal to Higgs branch of 4D n equal to 2 theory. And indeed, for genus equal to zero, what we compute here using mirror agrees with the Hall-Littlewood index of the 4D Sicilian theory. For, of course, if you have more adjoint here, you can always use the formula to compute whatever you want. It's still good as a counting function of the Coulomb branch. But if you ask for matching with the Hall-Littlewood index, it doesn't, which is expected anyway, right? So we check the agreement with the Hall-Littlewood index in case of genus equal to zero, and it's agreed with the mirror symmetry. And the Coulomb branch Hilbert series cannot just compute for the A type, but the mirror of D type, twisted A type, twisted D type. And we test some cases with the E type also. It works. Okay. So now, I will just present the last application, namely how to use this to do KG instanton on a flat space. This is a very short section, a very short application. So for a simple group G, a moduli space can be realized from Coulomb branch of affine Dynkin diagram. You have seen an example of the case of D4. So these guys will compute the moduli space of instanton realizing from the Coulomb branch of this guy. So these are gauge group, these are hypermultiplet you have in the theory. This attached node corresponds to the center of mass motion of the instanton. So you can realize it from this quiver. For E6, E7, E8 also, you can also realize this from the extended Dynkin diagram with attached node. Okay? It all gives you the Hilbert series, which is five-dimensional partition function. So now you can ask, how do you do non-simply laced group? Right. Because this guy come with the certain special arrows. But my claim is that you can always still use the formula in the following way. So basically, the arrows just tells you that the weight, magnetic weight, with respect to this node has to be changed. So it changed as follows. When you have one line between two nodes, you just insert this. When you have two lines and arrow, the weight of the bifundamental change according to here. Since you know the weights and the root, you can go back to the monopole formula, compute the Hilbert series, and get the answer. What we check is that all of these Dynkin diagram that we presented give the rise for BN, CN, give the expected Hilbert series of instanton on BN and CN on C2. For G2 and F4, there are plenty of results. The check can be done on the using analytical structure of Hilbert series, which I'm not going to mention here, but it can be computed. And also, gluing technique can still be applied. For example, for the G2, you can still do this thing and glue this thing together using this type of rule. So, yeah, this is the conclusion that you can use monopole formula or Hell-Littlewood formula to compute Coulomb branch Hilbert series for all of this type of quiver also. Right, so let me conclude. Thank you for bearing with me. It's 5 minutes over time. Study moduli space of 3D n equal to 4 gauge theories using Hilbert series. We know that we have certain quantum corrections to the Coulomb branch, and we capture them using monopole formula. Coulomb branch Hilbert series, we present the Coulomb branch Hilbert series of the building block T rho of G and glue them together, okay? And of course, we provide more tests for 3D mirror symmetry. There are plenty of examples can be computed. Connection between Coulomb branch and instanton moduli spaces, Hilbert series and 5D Nikrasov partition function. And now the Hilbert series for KG instanton on C2 can be computed for any simple group G, including non-simply laced and exceptional group for any instanton number K. Okay, thank you very much for your attention.
Mm-hmm. So suppose one of the the operators in the parallel ring, and we wanted to understand whether that is a partition function. Let's say 4 dimensions of the partition function is 3 times 1. So I just wanted to ask if the following is true as far as I know. So the partition function is very close, right? And the poles correspond to homomorphic sections that appear in that point in the complex structure moduli space. Mm-hmm. Or in other words, they correspond to generators of the parallel ring. I think there is a one-to-one correspondence between this co-dimension one singularities and generators of the chiral ring. And when this co-dimension one singularities intersect, this is the relation to the chiral ring. So I'm just asking if the chiral ring is basically encoded in the structure of singularities of the S3-1 partition function. And somehow we end up counting some property of the singularity.
That sounds plausible for the case that for the linear quiver case, right? We see that this co-dimension one intersection.
I would say that the co-dimension one singularity of the prediction function corresponds to four model seconds with a theory that point in co-construction model space, and that's in one to one correspondence with generators of the algorithm.
What's that holomorphic section corresponds to in the case of, say,
I would say that the generators of the category are in one-to-one correspondence with co-dimension one singularity.
But what is that co-dimension one singularity?
So if you just compute the partition function, it has follows. Like co-dimension one singularity. Simple poles.
Ah, simple poles.
Yeah.
In the partition function?
Yeah.
Okay. We also have interpretation of the pole of the Hilbert series. Do I have example here? For example, let me give you an example. You take U1 with two flavor. This is known to be Higgs branch and Coulomb branch. Of this guy. Hilbert series look like this. Now I'm unrefined every fugacity except the U1 that correspond to the generator of SU2. You can see that it has the order of the pole at t equal to 1 is 2. So this reflect the complex dimension of the space. This is what we know about this. And this is known dated back to Hilbert, actually. That he knows that whenever you describe a variety and you grade the variety using certain weight, the order of the singularity at t equals to 1 always the complex dimension.
That makes very much sense because the bulk response to mathematical particle, and if you have both then
the flat direction, right?
Yeah.
As I said. Okay, yeah.
This is why I was saying what I was saying before, that the co-dimension one singularity is that it always carries in general because they come from other particles. So they correspond to some like 2.03 in the period. And that corresponds to some.
This is a mathematical theorem also. So agree with what you said.
Understand that the status of the compression of the index. Did you look at the Hilbert index and check for some specialization of the parameters in the Hilbert series?
Meaning which index? S2 times S1 or?
But the only the index.
Okay. I should say that Shlomo has a check in case of T of SU2, which is 1 and 2. It's explicit. You have to do some limit. It's called the Coulomb branch limit. So taking Q in his limit in the fugacity. For certain cases that we proceed, take the formula in the paper and check. We found agreement, especially the U-type case. I have no problem with that. I can pinpoint which equation that he has this formula. There is a coincidence. And he also mentioned that in the paper, I think. So it's a check.
But nobody has checked the formula of the index as it uses to your
formula. As I said.
In general, I mean, not for.
Yeah, well, there are some notation and form that you should.
Yeah, but in this one, especially the data part, the math-dependent part, that's the.
We could look at this together. I'm happy to look at this with you. That's that there is a certain representation that is also very similar in expression to this one, except that there are subtleties in this summation. Maybe he didn't model by the wild group and he make it repeat, but weight weight it with something to normalize it correctly. We should look at this thing. But it's a similar form. Right. Let me tell you, this is the part that I skipped in the first sector when I talk about Higgs branch Hilbert series. You can obtain all of these results. In fact, since this is not the focus point of my talk, I skipped it. When you obtain this expression, for example, or this guy, you can ask, how do I know all of these things for general Hilbert gauge theory? Right. It's not so simple to do this simple analysis anymore. Right. In that case, the integration that you mentioned is integration. So what happened is you build a chiral ring using symmetric product. And then you restrict it to the gauge invariant sector. Restricted to gauge invariant sector amounts to integrate over the Hahn measure. And that's related to. It's encoded in the series. It works for genus G equal to zero case. You can explain why.
Yeah, it works in series where there are no loops in the
fermion. Right, because the fermion contribution coincides with F term.
Now when you mention, let's not confuse two things. There is a specialization to 3D or the 4D index, and the 3D index, and they have nothing to do with each other. So let's not confuse them because we are talking about apples and oranges. So about the one with.
They should work with the 3D index.
Yeah, they should just take the 3D index.
In the paper, they already write some comparison there. That's what I invite you to look at, right? So I didn't get.
For me to look at.
The statement is the following. The statement that I know for sure is the following. For the analysis of this computation, for the inference, does not make you say the specialized, but like the books in the paper.
Oh, it does.
So there's a only little index that is not quite.
Well, this computation doesn't deal then in the elite is comparing it to the IR. It's not protected as an index.
Yeah, that's the kind of
I think it's very likely that if you specialize the index in 3D, you will get this formula. Or if you don't get this formula will not die.
So, but okay, so protected, okay, so you agree that the Higgs branch here is classical exact. So what I compute here is no quantum correction there, on the Higgs branch. Now, you were not here when I talk about the Higgs branch. This is the first part of the talk. The second part of the talk, I talk about Coulomb branch, and I talk about the quantum description of it. So you said this can be corrected further, then provide me an evidence. I mean, I claim that this already tested by mirror symmetry and all known theory that we know.
I'm just saying it's.
Is it corrected further, or you think I'm not capture all quantum correction on the chiral ring in the Coulomb branch?
I'm saying that you should not have to worry about this. You should just make sure that what you're computing is an index.
You can try to compute something, but doesn't.
Yes.
Those things exist.
Why?
Right, the concept is operators.
But
that is a thing that you can hope to.
But it's a calculation that in the UV. You can't compare for the theory in the UV.
So it's a protective factor. I think one of the constants in the way I expect.
logarithm for which that singularity could not have more functions that could not be extended to the whole space. Right?
That's right, but this is something you can check. I think that the homework.
But I think that the column branch story is more complicated. Even for the Higgs branch, the story is not complicated. Because for the Higgs branch, we know that it's classically protected. It's protected, right? And people can count it. And we don't know how to get that from an index. So there is puzzle even in the case where this, like, the property doesn't exist. And that's a very interesting puzzle.
So this works, okay.
So I'm saying that even for the Higgs branch, for the branch of many possible, we do not know how to obtain the Hilbert series from S3 times 1 prediction.
But you can always do you can do it from the first principle, meaning you take Cairo.
No, I don't know what you're saying. I just think that it would be nice if it could be obtained as the
okay.
three times one prediction function. Or an integral, which is more like just three times one prediction.
But the important point is that starting from the description itself, f and d term, it can be computed. And for 4D n equal to 1, the Higgs branch, there's no Higgs branch, but for example, supersymmetric QCD, you can also compute it. 4D n equal to 1 supersymmetric QCD on electric and magnetic side. You don't believe, I see. Well, we can discuss, we have result about that.